Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
Welcome back to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Folks, all the talk right now is about the draft. And since we do things first class, we went and got the man with the first pass. Well, the first pick in the draft. That's right, Urban Meyer joins this show today. But first, we start with the MIP report. We have an NFL chain-moving champion retires. Is he a Hall of Famer? Also, speaking of champions, are the champions setting the wrong precedent for the National Football League moving forward? That we must discuss. Plus, Conor McGregor is back. All right, first story on the MIP report. Julian Edelman, and I call him a chain-moving superstar champion, retires. Is he a Hall of Famer? Let's dive into this because that's everybody talking about. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer? And there's so many levels to this discussion that I can dive into because there's so much pain that I've watched and watch receivers experience when we start talking about this Hall of Fame experience. And honestly, it's warming in one sense, worrisome in another sense, when I hear how everybody jumps on, and a lot of people are really pulling for Julian Edelman to get in the Hall of Fame because they know what they've seen with their eye gate. They know what they've seen. They've seen in big moments, this man has made big plays, and he's come up big time and helped this team win a lot of big games. So you say that has to be a Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famer is the man that gets it done when it's most crucial, when it's most important. And we can certainly say Julian Edelman has done that. Julian Edelman has great playoff numbers. He had 118 receptions, 1,400 yards, and 5 TDs. I mean, you know, in some sense, maybe second only to Jerry Rice in the playoff form. But his regular season has been some different. 620 receptions, 6,822 yards, and 36 touchdowns. I always say, guys, when we look at numbers, you know, the number you have to look at is that last number. Do you got some Super Bowls? Because ultimately, everything we're trying to do is work towards Super Bowls. So if you caught passes and made big-time plays that ultimately lend to you winning Super Bowls, I want to put that in a heavier weighing category, give you more credit in that category. And Julian Edelman has done that. Let's do a comparative analysis here. I'm in the Hall of Fame. I need not say that. I hope y'all know it, you know, but I just said it anyway. And I have 750 receptions, 11,904 yards, and 65 touchdowns. Of course, I got 3 Super Bowls too. You know what I mean? And I waited 3 years to get in the Hall. You know, I went through the process. And I'm just saying right here, this process that receivers have to go through, because right now there are receivers that have had incredible careers, more numbers than I have, not more Super Bowls. Let me make sure y'all all always understand that. Not more Super Bowls, but they may have more numbers than I have. You got guys like Hines Ward who's still waiting. You got guys like Torrey Holt who's still waiting. And these guys got numbers and they have rings, but they're still waiting. I got Drew Pearson just got in. He's waited forever. They made Ark Monk wait forever. And at the time he retired, he was at the top of the food chain with receptions and yards and at the top of the food chain with champions. I'm telling you, it's something they do to wide receivers where they make receivers wait. I don't know. Maybe it's because we're kind of, as people see it, we're kind of weird in off the football field. So they kind of take that into account, you know, even though they don't supposed to take those things into an account, but they do take them into the account and measure it, I guess, accordingly and try to keep you out. This is why I say this. I want to propose this. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer? I say it's time for us to make some adjustments to this. This new NFL that we are seeing, what we've seen is the rise of the slot receiver. The rise of the slot receiver. Now, that guy in the slot in this new NFL, this spread NFL, has become so important to the success of teams. You know, Wes Welkers, Julian Edelman's, all those guys were so important to Tom Brady's success. How can we say, Tom, you get in, but avoid all of these guys? That's why I'm saying we gotta start thinking about a new category and calling it the slot receiver category. We did this years ago when I was in the league for the fullback because, you know, every year we had Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, Ricky Waters. All these guys were taking up the running back position at the Pro Bowl. By definition, a fullback is a running back. But Emmitt Smith has 1,500 yards and Darryl Moose Johnson and all those guys, they have maybe 200 total yards rushing. But their position was so vital. It was so vital to the success of teams that we had to come up with a category for fullbacks to help them get recognized individually and carry one fullback to the Super Bowl, to the Pro Bowls every year. We have to start maybe even thinking about that in this direction. Because if you ask me if Julian Edelman is a Pro Bowl slot receiver, I can go into definite right now, hell yeah, no doubt. Easily, yes. For what this man has done and the plays that he has made and the time that he has made those plays, did he stain your brain with those plays? Every time we start talking Super Bowl, one of the plays I see in my head is Julian Edelman catching that ball before it hits the ground that bounced off the feet, and I don't know how the hell he made that play. But it's in my mind. Every time I start talking Super Bowl, so he stained my brain. He stained my brain. And if I'm starting to talk about, you know, how important it is to get those first downs, how important it is, because that kept the team going, to get those crucial downs. When I look at the playoffs, I had 87 receptions in the playoffs for 1,300 yards and 8 TDs on our route, in our route to getting those 3 Super Bowls. Julian Edelman had 118 receptions, 1,400 yards, and 5 TDs. Now, he has 31 more receptions, but only 100 exactly more yards and 3 less touchdowns. But the reality is, I guarantee you, if we break it down, those 31 more receptions were probably all first downs. They were probably all first. Do you know what 31 more first downs are for your football team? Are you almost cursed? Are you joking? So somebody said, we're going to give you 31 more first downs this postseason. That's insane. That's insane. From that perspective, we have to start considering. Because on his own, face-to-face, people will say, how can you put him in before Torrey Holt? How can you put him in before Hines Ward? How can you put him in before Reggie Wayne? How can you do that? But if we add some slot receivers in here, slot receivers, there's no question Julian Edelman belongs in the Hall of Fame. We watch this dude. And how many times have you heard me say, I count men on distance travel? He came in as a quarterback and converted to the position and did the things he did. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you, it's different when I'm outside. When you're playing outside than when you're playing in the slot. The slot receiver has to have the mentality of the quarterback. Think about it. He has to know not how to get open, but also when to get open. The quarterback drops back. When he drops back, he's reading up the field first. So he's reading the outside receivers first. Let's see if we can get a play up the field. I want to try to get 15 to 20 yards if I can. But when that doesn't work, now I come down and check my slot receivers most of the time. And if I check him and he's open, I'm going to this. We call him a check down, or we check down to the slot guy. But you understand what he has? He has to know when to be open. So if he's open when the quarterback's looking upfield to the outside receiver, he's open too early. The defense is going to start converging. By the time the quarterback comes down to the check down, he's covered. So he has to have a sense of timing. He has to say, okay, quarterback's reading up the field first. Let me make sure I take my time and get to my spot, wherever I have to be, between that linebacker and the safety, wherever I have to be between those two linebackers, wherever I have to be there late because he's coming to me late in the play. Understanding that positioning, understanding how to sit down in a zone, and understanding when to sit down in a zone, it's a difficult thing, folks. It's a difficult thing. I couldn't do it. I could have extended my career if I had the ability to come down inside and maybe play slot, but I couldn't. It was very difficult. You see guys like Larry Fitzgerald, he's able to do it, but I couldn't. So that's why I'm saying it's a category in a skill set that should be separated out and considered something different. And that way we can put down this discussion about Julian Edelman being a Hall of Famer, because no doubt he's a Hall of Fame slot receiver. We're just measuring him right now to the outside receivers. Most of the balls I catch are going to be at least 10 yards up the field. At least 10 yards up the field. Julian Edelman, he'll catch a lot of 3, 4, 5 yarders, but that could lead to, in a playoff run, just think about this. In a playoff run, you get 31 more first downs. That's insane. That's incredible. That's why I say Julian Edelman should get in the Hall of Fame as a slot receiver. But just as a receiver, he may get in, but it'll be a while before they let him in. You see what I mean? It may take a long time before they say, we'll let him in. When I look at how long it took Drew Pearson to get in. Julian Edelman, let me say this to you, my brother. I thank you for the career. I thank you for the inspiration that you've given all the undersized guys. When people look at you and say, man, he's small. But they can, they will carry it on and say, it's not the size of the fight, of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in that dog. And Julian Edelman has so much fight in him. I tell him all the time when I see him, I love the fight that's in that dog. I believe that dog one day will fight his way to the Hall of Fame because he's a champion. Now, let's get to the next story on the MIP since we are talking about champions. The champions, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, want to continue doing the virtual offseason because they say it worked so well last year. Do I think this is good news? I was watching a documentary on Whitney Houston that touched me a couple of days ago. And I want to say what Whitney Houston used to say. Do I think this is a good idea? Hell to the gnaw. Hell to the gnaw. This is a bad idea all the way around. First of all, to try to say it worked so well last year, so we're going to continue it this year. I don't contend it worked so well last year. I mean, if the Buccaneers do what they did last year, this year, they got no shot at getting back. Let me break this down for you. I remember it was week one they lost to the Saints. Week nine, they lost to the Saints. Week 19, they beat the Saints. It took them all that time to get it together. And let me tell you right now why they can't take all that time to get it together. Last year, you were not the champions. Last year, you were able to sneak in and play teams as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This year, you're playing teams as a Super Bowl champion and as a champion already and as a champion that went back to back. Allow me to help you with what you are about to go through right now. I know Tom is telling you that you have to be ready because everybody's going to line it up and give you their best. You'll see people on film and you'll say, who is it? Golly, I'm about to kill these dudes. And then when you see them in a game, you're going to say, somebody stole their damn uniform. Who are these people? Because they're going to be giving you a whole different kind of game because you are the champs. And they're going to measure you, and you don't have 19 damn weeks to get it together. You better have it together in week one. Or by the time week 19 come around, you'll be playing all those future players because it'll be over. It'll be over. Now, that's on the field. I say it's a bad thing. But off the field, I say it's a bad thing too. Because the NFL has prided itself on setting precedent as we move forward in this country. Everything we do, every way NFL always talk about, we must set an example for the people that love the NFL and the people in this country. When I got suspended, the note that came from the commissioner said, Michael, since you enjoy great notoriety and fame for playing for the Dallas Cowboys, this requires me to suspend you for 5 games to make sure that we send the right message and set the tone for what's good and what's right in the National Football League. Right here, Tampa Bay, we got to set the tone for what's good and for right for what's rest for the rest of the country. And what's good and right for us as a country is to get back to normalcy. Troy Aikman said it. You know, a lot of this getting away from football produces bad football. We're already going up against the PA, and the PA is cutting down the practices. You don't get to practice as much, so it takes away some things. And I agree with some of those things and all, and trying to keep people healthy. But I want to see teams come together. I want to see everybody get back together. I want to see us send a message, sending messages. And the NFL is doing this. That's why they're opening up all the stadiums and practice facilities to get people vaccinated. They're trying to get us back to normal. And I want the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to stop spewing this. Stop saying like, oh, we found something. It works well. No, everybody went through that last year. It worked well because everybody went through it. It will not work well if you think you are just going to stay out and everybody else come in and get good. You'll see. I guarantee you, you'll see. Because by week 10 or 11, you will be just about out of the playoffs and everybody else will not be. And you will say, man, we made a bad decision. I say it's a bad decision all the way around. Now, I don't mind if you say, you know, now that we've known each other, maybe we'll do this for a bit. But we're going to start getting back to normal. I want everybody and I want everything, and it's our duty and our job to try to get things back to normal. I mean, all the way back to normal. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, I was on the fence with this vaccination. I really was. You know, but I started getting all my emails from the NFL like, hey, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to have to go through all these protocols. I got to go do the draft in a couple weeks. I'm tired of people sticking things up my nose. I made a decision over 20 years ago that I'm not putting anything else up my nose. And now everybody's just putting things up my nose. So I'm going to stop that right now. I went and got vaccinated. So I don't have that issue anymore. I don't have that issue anymore. And I know it's a personal choice, and people make that personal choice. I'm just hoping that we can get back to normal. Sometimes, somehow, some way, I want everything back to normal. I want to see you guys in them stadiums when we're there doing those games. So, Buccaneers, I understand it worked, but I think you're taking this from the wrong premise. It worked well and we won last year. We should do it again this year. That might be the first mistake the Buccaneers have made all offseason, because every other decision they have made has been spot on. But this one, I don't agree with. Let's get back to work, buddy. Let's get back to some normalcy. And as a champion, you're supposed to lead the way. Let's lead the way. Next story on the MIP report, Conor McGregor is back. Conor McGregor signs up for the trilogy in July with Dustin Poirier. Let me tell you something, man. Simply put, this is it, buddy. This is it. You dipped in and out of what I consider one of the toughest sports in the world, UFC. You know, because you can be totally better than someone else, but when you're slipping in and out and somebody slipped the wrong punch, or the right punch, I should say, you're gone. You're gone. This sport requires you to put in some time. And I like that Conor's turning around fighting again soon, as opposed to having these long layoffs, trying to wait to get the right person up to fight, because you need activity. But by the same token, to turn it right around and go back to Dustin, that means this is a must win. Conor McGregor cannot lose this fight. If he loses this fight, it's over. It's over. It's over. Nobody's going to keep lifting up the guy that loses 3, 4, 5, 6 fights in a row. It's over. So I'm looking forward to this trilogy from the sense of the definitive end is in sight if Conor McGregor doesn't show up and show out. You must show up and show out. You can't just win. You got to win. I mean, win. When was the last time we saw that left hand that knocked Aldo out in the first with that quick punch? That one hand. I remember Eddie Alvarez. He's crushing people with that left hand. He needs to crush Dustin. He needs to crush him. He needs a hit, one of those hits, and he's out. To step back on that podium where he commands the things that he's commanded over the years. This is a huge fight for Conor McGregor. I don't care how much money you have in the bank. It's about your legacy, buddy. And I'm going to tell you something, man. You can have all the money in the world. You can have all the money in the world. A guy like Conor McGregor, his legacy matters a whole lot to him. And I can't wait to see it. Because for some reason, call me what you want, I love seeing a desperate man with a plan. A desperate man with a plan can show you some incredible things. And Conor McGregor has to show us some incredible things. I didn't billboard this on the MIP report, but I got to drop this in here right here. On my way out the door and towards that room where Urban Meyer is waiting. Kevin Durant. Man, I see Kevin Durant and Shannon Sharpe now going at it. Let me just say this right fast. And I see people on social media and everybody say, Kevin Durant, just leave it alone, man. You're too big. Let it go. I keep telling you, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. Because we see it. Like Kevin Durant, why are you messing around with Michael Rapaport? Why are you going back and forth with Shannon Sharpe? Let it go. Let it go. And it seems so easy to let it go for everybody else. I mean, you're making $40 million over here. Let that go. Don't step down. But you got to understand the other side of it. Kevin Durant built himself and became Kevin Durant because of the way he received criticism. He used it as fuel, and he used it as wind beneath his wings to soar above all things and accomplish great things. He used it as a great asset. But now, to me, sometimes that great asset becomes a great liability. Like I understand you use that fuel. But now, don't let it do this to you. You stepped above the Rapaport arguing and all of that. And even the Shannon Sharpe, you're the man. You're the man, KD. I don't care what you say. Don't let nobody say nothing to you. You are a bad mother brother. You're the man. The only thing somebody could possibly say is between him and LeBron James, the baddest man in the world. That's the only argument you can make. I don't care about nobody. You don't give me nobody else. It's Kevin Durant and LeBron James. Baddest two men in the world. But KD can't just let it go, man. And I'm not even talking to KD. I'm talking to everybody else. I'm trying to give you, and I'm not blaming KD. I'm trying to explain, KD, so you can understand. You want him to just let it go, but this is part of who made him so great. This is part of what made him so great. And you can't cut it out. It's so hard that if you try it, you have to be like the most renowned heart surgeon or brain surgeon who cuts around all the things that you don't need with never touching that main artery or that main organ that you do need. And that's a hard thing to do. So telling Kevin Durant to stop it, folks, I'm telling you, you might as well stop it. Because that's just not who he is. On the way out, though, can I say this? Michael Rapaport, you can't start this kind of stuff, man, this kind of storm, and then come on TV and cry because somebody won't talk to your damn dog, Wheezy. Are you joking? You can't be getting mad because somebody won't say something to Wheezy and give me them crocodile tears. You know what I mean by that. But I'm going to call them crocodile tears. Stop that, man. Let's stop playing. You know what I'm saying? Okay, I didn't mean for that to rhyme. I'm going to stop right here. Let me get into the man that has the first pick in his upcoming NFL draft. And I'm telling you, this conversation, you will love. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. Hey, joining the MIP right here, this man needs no introduction. I'm just telling you, I always say that I've been blessed. And everywhere I set my feet in the sand, I have left a footprint of greatness. That means I just won on every stop. This man, everywhere he set his foot on the ground, has left a footprint of greatness. He has won on every stop. He got the head job at Bowling Green in 01, turned it around right away the next year. Then took a head coaching job at Utah, made them a national power right away. Then went to Florida, gave them two national championships, got to Ohio State, gave them a national title. He has three national titles. Get this, folks. A record of 187-32 at the collegiate level. That's simply one of the greatest collegiate coaches to ever coach the game. Now he embarks upon the NFL. Joining the MIP, the Mike Irvin Podcast, is head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Urban Meyer. Urban, Coach, I just want to say first, thanks for joining me, man. And earlier today, Coach, I was on the phone with my high school coach, George Smith, and he said, you ask Urban who's the only man to ever kick him out of a weight room, and he'll tell you. I said, Coach, when did you kick Urban out of the weight room? And he was telling me about your Cincinnati days. Do you remember that?
I do. I was, a junior or senior in college, and Billy Davis, who used to play at St. Thomas too, said, hey, we're fine, let's go lift. And we went down at our spring break and got a great lift, and we were both playing football at Cincinnati. He came in, and I mean, he treated Billy Davis like he'd never seen him before. Get your ass out of here, and screaming, and I was like, wow. And then we became the closest of friends. I love George.
Hey, he's a good man, Coach. I love him too. I wouldn't be here without him, Coach. But, Coach, I'm so excited to talk to you, Coach, because I was telling you, man, I've seen this show before. I've seen this exact movie. When I got to the Cowboys in 88 and 89, we hired Jimmy Johnson, college coach with great success, just like you. College coach with national titles, just like you. And a college coach coming in amidst all the people saying, doing it at the college level is one thing. Let me see you do it at the NFL level. That's another. And he had the first pick of the draft. Coach, have you had any conversations with that man, Jimmy Johnson, about his journey, his plight, and how he did what he did?
We've always been somewhat friends, but we got really close when we were together at Fox. And, you know, he really helped me in the broadcasting world. And that whole group of Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long, and
that's good.
Glazer, and we just became really close to those guys. And Jimmy, as much as respect as I had of him before as a young coach growing up in the profession, once you get to know him, and we actually did Joe Torre, the coach of Michigan State, the basketball coach.
Izzo.
Tom Izzo, myself, Izzo. And Coach Johnson, and we did like a Fox thing. And he got up and started to speak, and I was like, I get it now. I understand the magic behind Jimmy Johnson. From that point forward, became friends. I leaned on him heavily during his decision process about college, about NFL, staying broadcasting. And actually, I just got off the phone with him today, and I'm going to lean on him in this draft that's coming up. That I think there's one of the best – not think. He's one of the best of all time, and he'd be the first one to tell you that coaches get far too much credit. As I said, we need some Michael Irvins around here to if we're going to rewrite this script.
But when you're about to draft a Troy Aikman, it's just like he got to draft a Troy Aikman. And Coach, you've seen it all, man. I've seen it all. I mean, this decision here, I don't remember it being much of a decision, even for Coach Johnson. It was like, no, we were basically going to take Troy Aikman. Everybody has Trevor Lawrence linked to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The fans just pitched in to get him a great wedding gift and everything, and raised a lot of money, way past what they were trying to raise for him. What are your thoughts about all of this, Coach? And is there any possibility that anybody else is taking at number one besides Trevor Lawrence?
Well, first thing, Trevor's not going to need any help with buying wedding presents. I got a feeling he'll be fine. He's certainly, that's the direction we're leaning. We're headed in that direction in case something changes. That's going to be the ownership level at this point. We've done our homework. It's very close. There's some very good quarterbacks out there. But that's going to be an owner, you know, Shad Khan, myself and Trent Baalke. It's pure cooperation about this. But this will be the biggest decision made certainly in recent history of the Jaguars, maybe because this will set the path, that pick. And we got very good trade capital and draft capital and picks. So we're going about 10 hours a day right now. That's not good for a guy like me that's ADD to watch all that film just over and over and over again. But we cannot miss on this. We can't miss.
And Coach, that right there is a hell of a thing as I sat back and thought about it and watch Coach Johnson go through the process. You know, it's one thing to recruit because you get to go in their homes and you sell the parents. You got everybody. They're ready for you. They love you. You get the kid there. And the kid's already kind of bought in. And all of his backup, his parents, his family, they've already bought in. You know what I'm saying? But now it's a business. You know, you get a business. It's a business. So you get to draft these kids. Talk to me about this transition and getting ready to do your first NFL draft, Coach. What has surprised you the most? What would you say, looking at it, that you say, wow, this has been probably the most challenging thing in the transition?
Well, my favorite part of the day has always been to go be around players and get in the weight room with the players and talk, you know, get to know the people you're going to coach. And in January, I have not to this date. It's April, whatever it is, 12th, I believe. It's April 12th. I've not had a team meeting yet because you're not allowed. Now, I've talked to all of our players, most of them, because they're really got really good quality people here. They've been in my office. We've gotten to know them a little bit. The free agents I met after the fact when we signed them. So it's just the whole personal piece of getting to know the players. That's something I miss dearly. I can't wait. A week from today, we're supposed to have our first phase one, which will be around. Hopefully it might be virtual, but at least we're going to get to talk to our players and get to know them and explain to them the culture, that the expectations of the Jaguars. And I think we all know that's important. So that's the biggest transition. That in college, you have any given day, you have 75 players rolling through your facility. They're in your office. You're around them in the weight room. You know, and that's been a little bit of a transition. I understand it. It's just that's been a transition.
You talk about being around those guys, man, and I think that's such an important part, Coach. When you talk about trying to change the culture, and everything I've been reading talks about how you are changing the culture. What are the things that you are trying to implement to change the culture of Jacksonville? Coach, let me tell you something now. Because when I got to Dallas, I was coming from Miami. We were like doing a lot of winning over there. I got to Dallas. I was like, wait a minute. We lost our first game. I was in the locker crying. I mean, this is a true story. I mean, boo-hoo crying. And I had guys come up to me like, hey, Michael, we're in the NFL now. Come on now. We don't do that. We pick up them checks on Tuesday. I was shocked because, you know, the guys had been around a while and that culture had changed. I remember when Jimmy came in the next year. I'm not going to lie. I was a snitch. I said, Coach, these all these guys got to go. They're talking about making money and not talking about winning games. And these guys have to go. We had conversations about that. Talk to me about how you plan on changing that culture in Jacksonville and making a perennial winner like you've done everywhere else you've gone.
Well, there's two ways. Number one is with great clarity, lay out the expectations. And Pat Riley's, I've heard him say it before, one of the greatest coaches of all time in basketball, is when winning becomes as important as taking your next breath, we have a chance. And there's not a lot of Michael Irvins. I mean, and people, I want people in our organization that it becomes that important to you. And I understand it's not going to be college. The days of going 13-1 and 15-1 and et cetera are really over. I mean, you know, there's been very few teams do that. But number one is with great clarity, you set the expectations and you demand people to live up to that. The second one is talent acquisition. And I want to go get the same type of people that Jimmy Johnson did when he selected you, Troy Aikman, and Emmitt Smith. I want to win. You know, the one common denominator about that team at Dallas, and I've talked to Coach Johnson about this, you know, different shapes, sizes, backgrounds. You wanted to win,
yeah,
and you got real serious about winning. And if I can get that in my locker room, we will win. And it's, but you know, we you have to develop it, but then you also have to acquire that talent where winning is that important.
And Coach, Jimmy would have meetings, and I'm telling you, he would tell us stuff like that. He was straight with it. He said, "Listen, I know guys come from a lot of different places, and they come for a lot of different reasons. We got guys here that just want to make some money and take care of their families. Nothing wrong with that. We got guys that want to get famous. There's nothing wrong with it." He said, "Yeah, we got guys in here who just playing so they can get some girls. They want the girl. Ain't nothing wrong with that." He said, "Understand, if we shoot for those things, we'll never get them. But if we all shoot for winning, then we can get all that other stuff with it. It's about winning the football games." Coach, how do you relay that message to your guys and say, you know, with all that has gone on and around here, now we have to understand that it's only about winning.
Well, Michael, in college, it changed about 5, 6, 7 years ago. You know, we started recruiting really, really well. You start getting the Zeke Elliott's, the Mike Thomas, the Bosa brothers, Chase Young, all these Marshawn Lattimore's, all these very highly recruited people. And it used to be, college used to be about the brotherhood. It used to be about your university. It used to be about, now it's about your value. And there's no secrets about that. You know, the money is transformational money that if you get drafted very high. So in recruiting, people wanted to come to Ohio State because there's a great chance if they did everything we told them to do, they'd get drafted very high and their value would go up. And winning increases your value. I'm taking the same approach here. We've redone our entire sports performance here. I'm a nut about that, about how we treat the player. If you take care of yourself, your value goes up. If you win games, your value goes up. So we're going to try to make this the ultimate organization as far as sports performance, how we train you, how we coach you, and then obviously winning. So if you want to, you know, I know value is very important to you. Being 1-15 doesn't provide much value for you. Go win some darn games. And by the way, we know how to do that. Let's win games. Take care of yourself. Let's get maximized who you are. What's your sports performance, training room, weight room, and let's go win the games.
Yeah, I've been on that 1-15 team, Coach. I've been on that 3-13 team, Coach. I've said this, Coach. I'm not gonna lie. I said the greatest moment I've ever experienced in the NFL was after winning that first Super Bowl. You know, because of the journey and what we had to go through to get there. I stayed in the locker room 2-3 hours after the game because we did it. It was the toughest thing to do, but the greatest joy when you got it done. And I'm telling you, Coach, it's something. When I look at the things that you've done, I said, man, Coach has gotten the chance to accomplish some great things, but I guarantee you it'll be nothing like this. If you get this thing here to a Super Bowl, from where it is to a Super Bowl, it would be absolutely nothing like it in your career, Coach. And speaking of your career, Coach, why now? Why now? People have been in after you forever to step into the NFL. Why now put your foot and your toe in this water?
By the way, I'm taking notes as we go, getting ready for my first team meeting, some of the things we're talking about. Why now is that I stepped away from Ohio State, and I kind of my heart knew I was done with college, that I've always been intrigued by the NFL. I had a great job at Fox. I really thought I was finished. And, you know, I got a few phone calls last year. And I started thinking, I said, no, I'm not going to do this. You know, I'm good. And then the further I got removed, I talked to Coach Johnson about this. I thought it would be okay. You know, on purpose, I didn't want to go to stadiums very often because you start getting that feeling about jumping in again. And then I had a couple phone calls about college, and college is changing a lot. It's just changing a lot. And I thought, you know, I've done that. And then I had a few phone calls about the NFL. I really respect our owner. I've had a relationship with Shad Khan over the years. I love Tony, the 904 Jacksonville area. I know this area. I know what they've been through. I just had this dream of this place exploding and supporting the Jaguars, and they deserve a chance to go win. And our owner, he wants to win. And I saw when I saw the Jets win that game, and I saw an opportunity to get the number one pick overall, I was almost like, okay, if you're ever going to do it, this is it. You get to pick your number one pick. You get to, you know, pretty much pick your team through free agency, the salary cap, and the draft. And you're in a place that you love, the state of Florida. Take a swing. And my family got behind it. And so let's do it.
So, Coach, having that number one pick really kind of sealed the deal here. Because it gives you an opportunity to say, all right, at least I get my quarterback and start building around that. So that made a huge difference. I don't mind telling you, I know them calls you got last year. You obviously didn't get the call I wanted you to get because, you know, I was sitting there saying other things. You'd have had a star somewhere on your chest, right, if it would have gone the way I wanted it to go. But in all of those calls, Coach, even last year, what tempted you? Was there anything that tempted you that you almost stepped in, but then stepped away from it? Is there anything that happened like that?
Yeah, the biggest thing is the team, the players, winning and losing. You know this from television, by the way. You're great at it, and even Coach Johnson and I talk about. At the end of the day, there's no win and loss. You know, we like competing with the ESPN Game Day, and that was great. But at the end of the day, you know, your personality, I know yours, I know mine, and there'll be a time. And I thought that's what I miss so bad at the end of the day is going to work every day to go win. And we took the same approach at Fox with my team, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Brady Quinn, and Stoner. Let's go win, man. And I'd dive into my team at the Fox studio, say, man, that's not good enough. Let's go. If we're not the best, why are we doing this? And I just love that attitude about it. I missed the players and I missed the winner losing.
You talk attitude, you're talking mindset. I mean, and a lot of people talk physical skill set. There's a difference. I always say there's talent shoulders down, but I need the right talent shoulders up. I need the right mentality. I need the right guys. You know what I mean? I'll take a little less physically gifted dude if he knows how to get everybody together and let's go hunt. You know what I mean? So you know, because it matters, Coach, I think, especially at this level. I don't care what anybody say. Maybe you can do it in basketball and baseball and hockey because you can have individual isolated success in those sports. Maybe you can still win championships. You're not doing it in this league. You're not doing it in this game unless you become a football family where everybody's playing for everybody. One of the common threads I say woven through all the championship teams that I played on was basically, Coach, a promise made one man to another. Every time I step on this field, I will get my job done. If you can't make that promise, then you can't be on my team. You can't be on my team. We can be friends. I can meet you at the bar. We can have some drinks. We can talk about anything else, but you cannot be on my team. We set a precedent on how we were going to practice every day. And if whoever came on our team, they had to follow that precedent, or we got to see about getting somebody else in here. Because we worked too hard to get here to let somebody come along and take that away. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly. And think about the greatest basketball player of all time. One of them. I love LeBron and Michael. But Michael Jordan, when they had the documentary, The Last Dance, do you remember the piece when he said, and he got emotional? And you look at Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was an IBU.
Talked
Kobe
about being
Bryant.
Hard on people.
Hard.
Right.
Michael Jordan is like, he said, I'm not here to be your friend.
Right.
Let's go clear this up. If we get along, that's fine. But at the end of the day, we have a job to do, and that's maximizing win games. And he said, winning has a price, and so does leadership. Sometimes that price, it'll hurt a relationship. Sometimes it'll, you know, you don't always get along. That's okay. Great teams, as long as you respect each other and you're all giving it your very best, those are the best teams I've ever had. It's when we're not worried about how we feel about each other. But are we giving each other our very best? And that's how you win.
Could you talk about the game changing at the college level? When you say that game changing at the college level, now at the NFL level, what would you say right now you pull out and say, this is the biggest difference right here from where I was to where I am now as far as the game changing, college to pros?
Yeah, I think the early recruiting has really changed the game of college football. Players are making decisions as sophomores now. They're allowed to have official visits after their junior year in the spring. And I don't think it's right. I think you're forcing players to make some early decisions that They can't do the research. That player deserves to go wherever he wants to go. And football is a developmental sport. My son gained 35 pounds his senior year. And so what you don't want to do is have these players end up getting stuck where maybe they don't want to go. And then what do? They transfer. And there's this thing called the transfer portal, and people are changing schools right and left. And it's, you know, maybe a player, I've heard stories where, you know, a player, you kind of get after him for missing class or doing something they're not supposed to do. And they say, I'm out, I'm going to leave. Or you're in a battle for a position and that player gets beat out, he leaves. So it's just different. Am I saying it's right or wrong? I didn't say that. I'm just saying it's a lot different in that regard. And I think it all goes back to the fact that people are making early decisions in recruiting, to selecting schools, and coaches selecting players when they don't really know them that well. You know, now everybody, there's a lot of transfers right now.
Yeah, and you're right. And I never thought about it that way. You know what I mean? I never thought about it. I mean, and even when you think, like, we would talk, fight it out. Fight it out. You go work harder and win the position. Go fight for it, you know. And now it's like, I don't want to fight for it. If I don't got it, I just move, you know. And that trickles in now. That trickles up. I see that when you talk about that now. The way I thought the game changed also is for running, passing, and the proportion of how we run the ball and how we pass the ball. I think it's changed a great deal in that way. But in what you're talking about now, like, I watch guys now on the NFL level, and it's third down, and I see guys tapping the helmet. Receivers. This is blasphemous as a wide receiver. Yeah, there's nothing you can do to take me off the field on third down. Coach, you couldn't even send somebody in and say, get Michael out. So you get your ass back out of here. You tell Coach I'm coming to the sideline on fourth down if there's a fourth down. You know what I'm saying? So that same process you're talking about just transferring, I think it takes some of the fight and some of the sting in you away. And I see that making it at the level, at the NFL level. Now, once you get it at the NFL level, because they can't go anywhere, you got to combat that. You have to combat it as the head coach, and that's going to be a process.
Well, the common denominator of the Dallas Cowboys when you were there and when I had Michael Thomas and Zeke Elliott and Bosa, and we won that title. We won a title with the third-string quarterback by the name of Cardale Jones.
Right.
Cardale Jones did not transfer. He didn't leave. He wanted to fight it out, and he fought it out. Now he's a legend at Ohio State. But he was also a part of a culture set by Zeke Elliott, set by Mike Thomas, set by Bosa, Joey Bosa at the time. And that culture was that we're either going to be all in or you can't be here. And that was not a coach setting that culture. A coach gave a framework. But you know as well as I do, and Jimmy Johnson and Bill Belichick and all the great ones I've studied, it's the culture within that locker room. If you get that, now you can swing as hard as you possibly can.
Right, but you got to be smart about it and know how to work with guys on it, because now you can be as hard as you want. And Jacksonville's had this situation where they've had the strict guy, but I don't know that he communicated with the guys well. And then you see great players like the Ramseys and all of those guys leaving because, guys want structure and they want to be coached hard, but they want to know that you care, that you really care about them personally, and then they'll listen and take all that hard coaching.
That's exactly right. That game has changed dramatically, even in college, all the way from high school, college to the NFL. I go back to one thing, Michael. If Michael Irvin believes his coach can help add his value and teach him and help him win, there's pretty much we can walk on hot coals together. We'll walk through anything together. The minute that player does not believe that you as a coach can help him achieve his dream, you're done. That relationship severed. And so I'm working really hard on our staff, myself, making sure that we're doing everything possible. That player has got to leave this building every day and says, you know what, I'm getting better. And we have a better chance to win because of our staff and our players. If we do that, my experiences are, you know, you can practice hard. You can push players as long as there's respect and they know you care about them.
Coach, when I hear you talk, I can hear some of Coach George Smith and some of Coach Johnson and the things that I say to this day, Coach, to this day, I live on everything they've been saying. What they've told me on the football field was true for life, period. You see what I'm saying? When we talk about when those guys believe, if they believe you are giving them something, not just on this football field, but this going to make me true through life. The rest of my, Jimmy Johnson, hey, make the mind control the body. Stop letting your body control your mind. So when my body tells me when that 5 a.m. alarm goes off of my workout, I want to hit that snooze. Coach says, no. That's your body saying hit snooze. You tell your mind, you make your mind talk to your body. Don't let your body talk to your mind. No, shut up. We are not hitting snooze. We're getting up right now and get it done. Make your mind talk to your body. Stop telling your body to talk to your mind, because that's what it takes at this level. Coach, another thing, though, you won running that football at Florida with Tim Tebow and them great players. You ran the football at Ohio State with Zeke and them boys and Carlos Hyde. You ran the football. The NFL is wide open passing now. You're getting a great one in Trevor Lawrence. How will you make that adjustment?
Yeah, we won 3 national titles, and 2 of them were with dropback quarterbacks where we threw the ball a lot. And so we're going to adapt to what we have. Do I believe that you have to control the line of scrimmage? Michael, I don't think that will ever change. You have to be able to run the ball.
Right.
But when I had Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State, we had 50 touchdown passes. And so we're going to be very adaptable to our personnel. You know, think we're going to put a young rookie quarterback behind and put him in harm's way all the time? I don't think that's the right thing either. So I hired 2 excellent, one's a passing game coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer. And he's had incredible success. He had Luck as a rookie. He's had, Sam Bradford, really great quarterbacks, Rivers. And then you have Bevel, who's our coordinator. He also took Russell Wilson as a rookie, and within a few years, they won a Super Bowl. So, and he had Brett Favre, and he had, Stafford. So I've had, on purpose, I wanted to surround a young quarterback with veteran coaches. I had some college guys I thought about, but I thought that's not fair to this player. You know, I don't have an NFL experience, and I wanted to surround him. I can't be more happier than where we are in April with the 2 guys I have running the offense.
Coach, when you look at this kid, Trevor Lawrence, how good can he be? I mean, I love what I've seen from just a leadership standpoint. I love my quarterback, Dak Prescott, and I love guys like Tom Brady, because I tell people, if you can ever find the heart and soul of your team at the quarterback position, you're on your way to win a Super Bowl, right? Whatever. If you got the heart, so that means he has to be a great football player at the quarterback position, but also a leader. And all quarterbacks aren't great leaders, even though we force them to have to be leader by the position. But when I see what Trevor Lawrence has done, when he steps with his teammates out on the social justice issues and all of those things, or even step out and fight and say, hey, we want to play college football, when he's probably the one guy that could have said, I ain't got to play. I can just sit back and collect my check. He stood up and fought for everybody. That tells me, and I don't know him personally, if I was around him, I could tell you, that boy, this could be a different kind of dude. And you can get that kind of dude at the quarterback position, the sky is the limit. How good can this kid be?
Well, Trevor Lawrence certainly checks all the boxes, and I've made this very – that's really since I started coaching as a head coach. I actually – Jeff Tedford, I don't know if you remember that name. He was a great quarterback coach for many years at Cal and Oregon. And we would spend time – this back when he was a head coach at Cal. And the number one thing that every great quarterback shares is a competitive spirit, the elite competitor. Number 2 is they have to be tough. This is the most unique position in all of sport, not just football, sport. You have to know what all 22 people, 21 other people are doing on that field all the time. And you have to be a leader. I've had quarterbacks say, well, I'm just not a good leader. And I said, you're not a good quarterback. You can't. You have to elevate those around you. And the quarterback, all 10 other players are going to be looking at you in between plays that you better know what you're doing. So number 1 is competitor. Number 2 is toughness. Number 3 is can you lead yourself and lead others? If you can elevate those around you, you can play quarterback and be a great quarterback. And then the last 2 are intelligence and adaptability. Patrick, nowadays, Mahomes is a great quarterback because, first of all, he's a great skill set guy, but he adapts to every situation so well. Defenses are so good now. You have to be able to adapt. So those are the 5 qualities that I look for in a quarterback.
And this kid certainly has it meets all of those qualities, just at what level he meets them. I can't wait to see and enjoy it, to be totally honest with you. Coach, when you talk about this, we'll call it a rebuild, let's call it a build. A rebuild is somebody else's thing you're trying to put. You're building. You just got here. This is an opportunity for you to build. How do you see this going? Like, when you sit back and think, you know, I think about I lost a couple games in my 3 years at Miami. Now I lose 13 games in my first year. You know, and people were like, oh, can we get this done? You know, and then Jimmy comes in. We lose 15 games. Everybody's starting to doubt, can we get it done? But 3 years later, we won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. How do you see this playing in your head as you project what record you're looking to possibly try, what you're trying to accomplish next year, and then stack on to something a year after that? And where are you projecting? Well, hopefully we're in the playoffs in year 3. What are your thoughts on that? How are you projecting this?
I'm not looking that far ahead. You know, I think that'd be a mistake for myself and for the organization. You know, I'm going, we worked on end of season report. We wanted to find out what we had on this roster. The good thing is there is a solid nucleus to this. Josh Allen is and Miles Jack on defense. I love those guys. They can be very good players, and they're even better people. They're here training, they're working out. We've developed a good relationship with them. I got a sender in Linder. That's by the way, another St. Thomas guy that he's going to be the apex of the offense at center. We have a running back that, you know, 1,100 yards as a rookie free agent. So there's some really good pieces. I told you about the wideouts. Now we did free agency. We addressed some weaknesses. And then this draft, if we can get 5 to 6 starters out of this NFL draft and build a foundation, then we'll start worrying about down the road. But the number one thing I have to do is after talent, we have to do is when I look at you and I hear you talk, and I've heard you talk before, and I've talked to Emmett, who's a very good friend, and Jimmy Johnson is a very good friend. If we can create that type of mentality in the locker room, like the Patriots, when I went and studied the Patriots, they had a guy named Teddy Bruschi and Mike Vrabel and Tom Brady. Think about that. What did they all share? The absolute distaste and hatred of losing. Hatred of losing. Right. If we can get that, and that's my job. I want to, you know, we have to get the hatred of losing around this organization. Hatred of it.
How do you do it? Because let me tell you something. The way Jimmy helped us with it, we lost the game in Washington that we should have won. I'll never forget it. We got on the plane, Coach, and that poor little lady, she was just trying to serve. You know, she got that little car to start trying to get down that aisle. And Jimmy, my little people, so mad. You put that tray away. If they were hungry, they should have ate on the football field. Ooh. We didn't even eat. And so what happens? So now every game we played after that, in the fourth quarter, I would come in huddle and say, are we going to eat or not? Are we going to eat on this plane or not? Listen, can we not wrap this game up so we can get us something to eat on this airplane? You know, but Coach was, you know, he set that in us. He set that in us because when we lost, it was hella miserable. It was hella miserable. It was miserable for everybody. How do you set the culture and make people hate losing like that?
I think you have to be very smart about how you do it. You know, it's a little different era than it was back then. I get it, you know, but I'm hoping to surround ourselves with it, have the same sense of that hatred. And the ones I've talked to on our team hate losing. I can't bring people in here that accept losing. I can't do that. And I'm watching that very closely. You know, I want to get captains of teams. I want to get guys that are used to winning and that just detest losing. So how you do it, that still remains to be seen. I think every team, and Lou Holtz, one of my mentors, used to say this to me all the time, a team is a living organism. Every team's different. You know, if you're going to have the alphas who are your leaders who hate losing, that's what you want, but you don't always get that. So if it has to be the coach, eventually you get those players, but you're going to have to be the one that lead. Hopefully that we develop enough leadership within the organization and within the locker room that they hate losing, that they push each other to what? Not lose.
Coach, Jimmy had guys like me in the locker room when he got there. It was kind of, at least I was a guy to be able to push what he is and what he does and tell people, listen, this is going to work. I was reading what Griffin was talking about. Hey, this man is setting a culture. How important is it for you to have people in that locker room that you already know and that believes in what you got done, like a Carlos Hyde and guys like that?
It's really important. And if you don't have that, you don't have a chance. It's not going to happen. You know that. I know that. Right. Unfortunately, I can't take all, you know, there's things called contracts.
Different rules.
Players. Different. Yeah. I was already made some calls saying, how do I get these players that I want in this organization? I can't get them. They're under contract. And we actually asked a couple about some trade opportunities. They won't give them away because I know them. But I think, if we do our homework on the draft, there's some alphas out there. There's some Michael Irvin type people out there that refuse to lose. And we just have to, all of us, the personnel department, coaching staff, come together and make sure we're selecting the right guys.
All right, I'm going to have to let you get out. I know I'm keeping you along, Coach. But let me ask you this right before I let you go, Coach, because I thought he's done an incredible story, an incredible job, and you had him. You went undefeated with him. What are your thoughts on that comeback that Alex Smith made?
Oh, I wanted him here. You know, we talked to him about joining here, and he's had a tough injury. You know, and I, of all the players I've ever coached, and I would tell people this when people didn't know how tough he was, he's one of the toughest cats I've ever been around. He's one of those guys never had a beat in his life, just really smart, photographic memory. He did the things in the spread offense before people even knew what he was doing. And then when I saw him, and I was embarrassed to say that I knew he had a bad injury, he's so private, I had no idea how bad until I watched that. My wife and I looked at my wife, she's sobbing as we're watching that documentary. And I know his wife, Elizabeth, and Alex are dear friends. His parents are dear friends. He's one of the great stories in NFL history.
Yeah, and I watched it. I was sobbing, Coach. I was watching it, and it made me emotional. But you said something in there, Coach. You said you wanted him there. You guys tried to get Alex Smith in Jacksonville?
We had conversations with him, and there is some, you know, there's some medical people that in our organization that were very concerned. And you remember our GM actually drafted Alex at San Francisco. So you have two of the people in Jacksonville that loved Alex as much. You know, that was deeper than a player now. He's like our family. Both of us feel so strong about him. But, you know, that's something that we're just going to keep an eye on because I hope he comes back.
Coach. You're giving me way more time than I expected, Coach. And I know you got to get busy. You got to get ready for this draft, man. So you know, I'm going to wish you the best of luck, man. And thank you for joining the MIP and giving me a little time, Coach. And I'll see you. I guess I'll see you at that draft.
Much respect, Michael. Take care.
All right, Coach. Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com. Today. That's geico.com.